Alvise Loredan had been under no obligation to wash his family's dirty linen in front of me. His deception was harmless enough, and I accepted it as part of the act, part of the perpetual myth and mystery of Venice. When the concert was over, I came out into Campo San Fantin, where I noticed a man with two scarves draped around his neck, one white silk, one red wool, standing at the center of a burst of flashbulbs. It was Vittorio Scarbi, the art critic who had made himself persona non grata at the Courtauld Institute in London by walking out with two rare books in his satchel. Scarbi was posing for photographers with one arm slung around Signora Ciampi and the other clasped around the waist of a woman wearing a cap of pearls. Scarbi had not been made Italy's Minister of Culture, as it had been rumored he might be. He had been named Undersecretary of State for Culture, a lesser but still prominent position, and a surprising one under the circumstances. At the edge of the campo, a dozen silk-stockinged men in black capes and tri-cornered hats were waiting to escort the 1,100 members of the audience to boats headed for the arsenal and a great celebratory banquet. Teams of party planners had been working on the decorations for weeks. The Gazzettino had scheduled an early printing of the next day's newspaper, December 15, 2003, so that as guests took their seats at the banquet, they would be greeted by a glorious full-color photograph of the Fenice splashed across the paper's front page. World events had intervened during the day, however, and as a consequence, tonight's guests would sit down instead to a page one photograph of a grubby and bewildered Saddam Hussein, who had been captured in Iraq only hours earlier. But no matter. Having dinner with 1,000 people did not appeal to me especially, and anyway, I had other plans. I left Campo San Fantin and walked along Calle della Fenice toward the rear of the theater, then over a small bridge to the house on Calle Caurtorta, where I paid a visit to Signora Seguso, now the widow of the maestro Archimede Seguso, the Wizard of Fire. We stood at the window where Signora Seguso had seen smoke rising from the Fenice 8 years earlier, and from which Archimede Seguso had watched the fire all night. Signora Seguso said she did not care to look out the window at the Fenice anymore, because in spite of all the talk about com'era dov'era, the Fenice was definitely not as it was before the fire, not from her window at any rate. The Fenice's north wing, 30 feet across the canal, had been rebuilt several feet taller than it used to be, and an array of metal ducts, pipes, and fences had been mounted on top, making the view look more like the industrial landscape of Marghera than the lovely vista of terracotta rooftops that she and her husband had enjoyed before. No smudge, no scar, no trace or telltale sign of the fire remained anywhere in sight, except for the swirling, spiraling chips of color embedded in the tall black vase on Signora Seguso's bedside table. This vase had been the first of the more than 100 Fenice pieces that Archimede Seguso had made as his unique eyewitness account of the fire. He had brought this one home as a gift for his wife. And where were the others? Signora Seguso sighed. It had been 10 years since she had spoken to her youngest son, Giampaolo. Her husband's estate was still the subject of a legal battle 4 years after his death, and the Fenice bowls and vases were at the center of it. Until a court could decide their fate, those creations of love and fire would remain locked in a storeroom at the glassworks, seen by no one, gathering dust.